A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms was a knight that was dark and soon to be full of terrors. We chat about it on this edition of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is supported by SRC Incorporated, a not-for-profit defense contractor working to create an exceptional employee experience through respect, teamwork, and the freedom to innovate. Learn more at srcinc.com/careers.
When I was a child, my brother would tell me a bedtime story about the man who murdered our father.
A tense opening scene in which Jaime Lannister is grilled by the Queen's court set the stage for a drama-filled episode of A Game of Thrones. Welcome to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee. Episode 2 of A Game of Thrones, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, refers to a touching scene in which Lady Brienne of Tarth finally gets her long-coveted knighthood, and it was conveyed on her by Sir Jaime Lannister. The episode could have easily been titled The Knight is About to Be Full of Terror. Helping me break down the season 8, episode 2 of A Game of Thrones is Leslie Grace Streeter, entertainment writer for the Palm Beach Post down in West Palm Beach, Florida. Welcome to the show again, Leslie.
Very excited to be here, and I'm a geek about this, so I'm into it, man.
Well, thank you for lending your geekiness to the show. So before we get started on tonight's or last night's episode, I want to revisit a poll. So each week, to celebrate the entire show of A Game of Thrones, I do a different poll to find out what some of the fans' favorite moments were. And this poll was conducted within my Game of Thrones Small Council Facebook group, has nearly 800 members. And the poll asked fans to vote for their favorite battle scene. So here are the options.
Yes.
Night's Watch versus the Wildlings, the Battle of Blackwater Bay, Battle at Hardhome, which is the good guys versus the White Walkers, Battle of the Bastards, and the Dothraki and Drogon versus the Lannister army. And that was the first use of a dragon in Westeros. So that was pretty cool to me. So which of those was your favorite?
The Battle of the Bastards.
Battle of the Bastards. Why?
Any of these battles, what I like is because there's so much going on. For some reason, that particular battle, also because the sort of social and emotional weight of being called and embracing being a bastard and what that means, and rooting for one and not rooting for the other. And it just, the show, people have talked about a lot, that their massive use of darkness. So you're like, what is going on? And I watched it 2 or 3 times to figure out, like, who died.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, whatever. And I think I had an emotional investment in it by the end of it.
Yeah. No, that was the number one. That was the number one pick by the Facebook group. So here's the order that it went in. Battle of the Bastards. The Battle at Hardhome. Good guys versus the White Walkers. That one surprised me. Number 3, Night's Watch versus the Wildlings. Number 4 was the Battle of Blackwater Bay. That surprised me as well. And number 5, getting the fewest votes, was the Dothraki army and Drogon versus the Lannister army. The Battle of Blackwater Bay was a good battle, but the use of wildfire in that was a jaw-dropping scene to me. So that was one of my favorites. I actually voted for Battle of the Bastards, but I thought Battle of Blackwater Bay would rank a little higher among fans, because I just thought it was visually such a stunning scene.
Yes, it was.
Anyway, recapping a little bit of, here's what I was looking, based on last week's episode, looking forward to going into this episode, getting some answers or at least following up on some plot points. One was Arya's weapons request. I think we did touch on that last night. We'll talk about that. Sansa and Dany's relationship. That was followed through on last night. We'll talk about that. Jon's big reveal, whether or not he would say anything or keep it close to the vest. Jaime and Bran's meeting, I predicted would be anticlimactic. I was right.
Yeah.
And then Bronn's contract killing did not get touched on last night. And the other thing I wanted to look for was whether or not Dany was beginning to turn out to be more like her father than people think. So, getting into episode 2, that opening scene was pretty tense with Jaime getting grilled. and Brienne coming to his aid. Did you find that to be a tense scene as well?
I certainly did, because you're going, what I love about the show is that whether or not you like these people individually changes episode by episode or season by season, or do you like this person better than that person? Because I know a lot of my friends are big Jamie fans. I'm still not really, but Jamie means well most of the time, but he's still kind of a big cute dummy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's there to fight for right, but I would have also understood if they didn't believe him.
Right.
I would have understood that he killed the fathers of two of the people on the,
yeah.
You know, so they're like, yeah, not so much. But it was because you're going through, and I also remember that this show obviously happens before cell phones. So there are things that happen that we know happened that other people haven't caught up to, like
right.
The fact that Daenerys still doesn't know that her father was awful.
Right.
And because no one's told her. And so we know. So we're watching it going, would this change her attitude about the people, particularly Jaime in this instance, that she's talking to if she knew that he was awful?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so what do any of these things mean? So we're kind of like omnipotent watching this,
right?
And it was very tense because you're like, oh, that person's gonna grill him. They're not gonna like him. Do I want them to like him? Did mm-hmm. you supposed to like him in this? Okay, and here's Brienne, and I love her, obviously. So, you know, she's obviously going to stick up for him. It was very tense. I love, you can tell because I talk a lot. I love talking. I love scenes with a bunch of talking in it. I don't even love always the scenes where it's just like slow, lingering looks in dragons and stuff, because
right.
I can't. You know, I'd rather know people talk in those beautiful accents what they're talking about.
Yeah, the one of the things that scene did too, taking Jamie out of the picture for a second, was sort of move the plot line of Dany versus Sansa further along. So you could see when Sansa spoke up, was speaking to Brienne and pretty much said, well, you know, you I trusted you with my life, and I trust you in this instance. The side look that Daenerys threw her, you know, you could that was a pretty tense moment. You could cut the air with a knife. She did not appreciate a lesser person, and then this woman that she's got this power struggle going with, sort of going against the grain there. So that was a pretty interesting piece of the Dany versus Sansa theme going there. The other thing that I picked up on in this episode was racism is alive and well in Winterfell.
Oh, my Lord. I saw someone on Twitter said, no, these little straggle-toothed, lice-covered children did not just run away. And there's a whole discussion on Black Twitter about this and the whole Them Thrones thing. It's very popular. But the whole discussion where it's like, so you want to die here? You
want
to come to this place where nobody likes you? And we had to be slaves and we had to be servants, and you know, he doesn't have genitalia, so you're gonna go through all that to die in some place where like lice-ridden children shun you? I think not.
You know, but don't you appreciate the writers putting that in? I don't know if that was. I mean, we certainly had you know, angst against foreigners in George R.R. Martin's books. But this racial element, I really appreciate the sort of the reality of introducing something like that. We saw that when they first rode into town, the looks they were getting when they were on horseback. And then it was followed through with this scene, which I found to be sort of refreshingly honest.
Me too.
I like that. The other important scene was we talked a little bit about Dany and Sansa and this power struggle. There was some attempt to reconcile the tension between them, but that kind of went awry. Let's take a listen to that.
Yes.
And what happens afterwards? We defeat the dead. We destroy Cersei. What happens then?
I take the Iron Throne.
What about the North? It was taken from us. And we took it back, and we said we'd never bow to anyone else again. What about the North?
They were holding hands. Daenerys yanks her hand back, and it's like, you know, we were this close to having this sort of this dual power thing going in the right direction, and then Sansa brings this up. This is going to be, I think, a continued power struggle between the two.
Yes.
I think there is a great deal of jealousy from Daenerys toward Sansa. So we saw it when Theon Greyjoy came back into the fold, and they embraced. And the look that Daenerys was giving them was envious. It's like, you know, she envies the way that people respond to Sansa with sort of affection and respect. So I think that's going to be a continued theme, don't you?
I do too. I mean, here's the thing. And once it comes back to when you're in your own little kingdom, literally, and you're coming across the thing, you don't know these people, who they are. So Sansa was just a concept to her. Sansa was not, she doesn't know everything Sansa's been through, because Jon doesn't know everything Sansa's been through. She can't appreciate everything with, you know, Littlefinger and, you know, Tyrion and all being on the run and stuff. She doesn't understand that. Sansa to her was supposed to be a concept. She was Rob's sister. She was Jon's sister. She was supposed to get in line and get her to the throne. Everybody is her sidekick, which is so funny because you talk about the racism thing. Everyone, a lot of people, including me, have talked about the very early scene where Daenerys is being lifted up as sort of the white savior, crowd surfing over the crowd of brown people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she has gotten high on her own supply.
Mm-hmm.
And she smells herself.
Mm-hmm.
And is very much like bought her own PR. So when she comes, she is the baddest blankety blank in the land, and everyone's gonna bow to her. So when she walks in and she sees, first of all, that even though it's not a romantic love, that Jon and Sansa are very close, and it's like, oh no, I'm the head, mm-hmm. blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. And then she sees that everyone loves Sansa. It's like, no, I'm the hot young girl. I'm the one in charge. So she thinks she's just going to kind of charm her. Oh, you're as beautiful as you are. And Sansa's like, whatevs.
Yeah. I think Daenerys wants to be adored and feared at the same time. And the stuff just isn't working out to her, to the way she wants it to go.
Sansa also is something. She's got youth on her side, and she's got the home field advantage. And she's not – Jon is so, okay, I gave up being the king of the North, and I believe you, and I support you, and all this stuff. Also, he's getting, you know, some sex out of it, so he's, you know, kind of, you know, bought and sold that way. Sansa don't care.
Right.
Because Sansa was there. Sansa got assaulted and had to deal with Littlefinger and had to deal with the Greyjoys and all that, but she's not –
In that scene, she says, you know, she doesn't really trust this thing because she knows how men can be led astray by women, and pretty much thinks that that Jon is whipped, is going to do whatever Daenerys wants him to do. So interesting dynamic. I'm really looking forward to how that plays out to the very end.
Sansa is 100% my favorite character on that entire show.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about that in a second, because I want to get to my favorite character.
Okay.
Which is Arya.
She gets
her freak on. And,
yeah, she does.
And it set me back, because I still see this young woman as like a 12-year-old girl.
Yes.
So
I checked into that, and apparently they've aged them all up. From the very beginning, they aged them up. That Arya is supposed to be about 12 in the books, but that the way that the chronology works from the way that the movie, that the show started, mm-hmm. that she would be between 18 and 20 years old.
Yeah.
So... yeah, it was like, she's like, we're going to die anyway, so let's do this.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't blame you. I, you know, some crazy, you know, frozen dead people, maybe including members of your family, mm-hmm. Gonna come up and start killing people. You might as well know the touch of a man before that thing happens to you. So I no judgment from here.
Yeah. No, she is my favorite character. I'm not going to get into it because I'm going to have a poll on favorite characters toward the end. But why do you like Sansa?
Sansa has done something that, well, so many of them have, because it's a well-written show. Character development is very hard on episodic television, because unless it is this kind of show that moves a story forward, if it's just like a regular sitcom or a regular, you know, show about doctors or whatever, mm-hmm. it's very tempting to have the character stay exactly who they are.
Right.
Because that's who you like them as. They don't change. And that Sansa has changed so much. Each of them thought they were the only one left.
Yeah.
So when you have that and you're holding on to your family line because you think you were the only one left, and what she has gone through from thinking Joffrey was cool and kind of wanting to be the princess and rolling her eyes at her parents to understanding that Joffrey's role in that, and then everything that happens after that, and continuing to survive when everything is, everyone is literally trying to kill her and everyone like her, is so incredible to me. And that she can come to this end where she's like, look, I'm fully into my own. I don't care who you say you are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to, and I don't care that it's going to cause problems with me and my brother.
Yeah. Who I love. She is, she's my second favorite character. And I believe it is because she is the character that has exhibited the greatest amount of growth from being a silly little teenage girl to being really one of the more strategic players in this game. Brienne gets knighted. That was a very touching scene. We all know how this woman has struggled to do what is considered a man's job in a man's world. And she has held her own through battles, through individual fights. And it was rewarding to see someone that she admires so much in Jaime Lannister sort of bestow this honor on her and the folks in the room looking on and really appreciating what this means to her. So that was a pretty touching moment.
Very.
when she wasn't getting hit on by Giants Bane. My man is doing some serious lusting.
He's like, so like, well, I guess there's no decorum in that sort of place where he's kind of like, this is what I want. And he's like, oh, can't she just be a knight today? Does she have to deal with all this today?
This is that male gaze thing happening.
Oh, and he's like blatant about it.
Yeah. You
know, in her face about it. It's like, can we just let her be a knight today and we can go back to your pettiness tomorrow or not?
Yeah. Yeah. The big scene, John reveals. Now, that was one thing I was looking for, whether or not John would reveal the truth about his parentage or whether he would hold it for another episode or so. They revealed that toward the end there. John reveals to Danny, and that gets a little weird as Danny gets weird and defensive. Let's take a listen to that.
Now she bled to death on her birthing bed, was gave the boy to her brother, Ned Stark, to raise as his bastard. My name, my real name, is Aegon Targaryen.
That's impossible.
I wish it were.
Who told you this?
Bronn. He saw it.
He saw it?
And Samwell confirmed it. He read about their marriage at the Citadel without even knowing what it meant.
A secret no one in the world knew. Except your brother and your best friend.
Well, she might as well come out and said, this is some BS.
I know. And you know what's so funny is? He's thinking in his brain, oh no, I'm bonking my aunt. And she's past that. She's like, oh, so you want this throne, do you?
Yeah.
She's already gone way, which is when you asked the question in the beginning, has she sown some tendencies of her father. I read some comparisons. Is she somewhat Cersei-like? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, yeah, because she doesn't care. She believes that and she's been through horrible things. Everyone's been through horrible things. Everyone believes that she's owed this. She is the only one, however, who doesn't believe. Everyone else goes, all right, I'm going to have to do some negotiating here, or maybe like he was willing to give up his thing. She sees it as a foregone conclusion that it's her on the throne.
Yeah, she's entitled.
She's entitled. And when he's like, hold up.
And it's not like he's staking claim at that moment. He's sharing this, what should be a great moment. I'm not not that there's anything wrong with being a bastard, but I'm not a bastard. You know, I actually come from some good lines. You know, you have Rhaegar Targaryen, Lyanna Stark, and you. Not that I expected Daenerys to say, "Oh my God, this is great news." You know, I certainly didn't expect that. But she is going to ferociously fight for what she believes is hers, regardless of the traditional way that these things are handed down. So I think that sets up a battle between Jon and Daenerys.
And I'm fine with it because, honestly, I'm not a fan. I know of hers. So many people like, oh, and I'm Khaleesi and I'm whatever and I'm a bee. Like, doing my thing. I was like, eh, white privilege, white feminism, next. that's not true that I never liked her. I wanted her not to be abused by her brother. I wanted her not to be, you know, seen as chattel and that kind of thing. But as she began to, as I said, you know, smell herself and really believe that all these lives lost were about her getting her thing, I begin to really dislike her. Cersei, at least, understands who she is.
Yeah. She's a wolf, and she's going to show herself in wolf's clothing.
All the time. I choose violence. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. She doesn't dress it up. She's not telling people how pretty they are. She's not holding hands. Cersei's like, I'm a beast. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And I respect that more than I do because, once again, Cersei has never had any illusion about who she is. Now, she used to give illusions when she was very proper with her long hair. Now she don't care. Mm-hmm. It's like I'd rather just cut out the middleman and show you that I'm brutal so you know it and there's no doubt about it and we can get down to it. Daenerys still sees herself as a diplomat, which she's not. Mm-hmm. She still sees herself as the mother of these people. She still sees herself as everything but, unless she's killing hot guys with dragons, I will never forgive her for that. Poor Samwell's family.
Yeah.
I will never forgive her for that because that was rude.
rude. So, you know, I think the show, the writers have done a excellent job of this frog boiling slowly in water. So they've taken they've taken her from being a liberator and sort of conqueror, freeing slaves, and they're slowly turning her more toward her father's attitude, behaviors, and we've seen this slowly revealed episode by episode. The one thing that goes hand in hand with that is they didn't really sell this relationship between Jon and Daenerys. So that's why I think they're setting this thing up to have a pretty big climax between the two of them that I don't think people are thinking. The kind of climax that most people are thinking about. I think it's going to come down to some sort of battle between the two of them because they've not done a really good job of selling this romance. Not the way they did with him and the Wildling, not the way that they've done with other characters. This one, to me, sets up some fan theories that we'll get into in just a second. The last sort of big scene and reveal was Brandon Stark pretty much saying that the Night King wants a piece of him. You know, he is the Three-Eyed Raven, that the Night King in the past has come after the Three-Eyed Raven, and he is the reason that they are marching now toward Winterfell. Let's take a listen to that.
He'll come for me. He's tried before, many times, with many Three-Eyed Ravens.
Why? What does he want?
An endless night. He wants to erase this world, and I am its memory.
That's what death is, isn't it? Forgetting. Being forgotten. If we forget where we've been and what we've done, we're not men anymore. Just animals. Your memories don't come from books. Your stories aren't just stories. If I wanted to erase the world of men, I'd start with you.
How will he find you?
His mark is on me. He always knows where I am.
That's an important scene because we finally know why the Night King is on this move. I think I've been asking that question for a few seasons now. I'm like, why? I thought I was just stupid, you know. So I'm going back to the mythology and the legends, and I still can't figure out, other than the fact that it's happened before, why it's happening. And now we know.
Yes, absolutely. And once again, I love Bran. I've never read the book, so I had no idea what these things were. The first episode, he's just some kid who gets thrown out a window. So to see his character arc to be this otherworldly, the vessel basically for this otherworldly being who still has Bran Stark's memories, but is so much more as a sort of legacy. He's like the Buddha, basically. That's mm-hmm. the way that I kind of synthesized it, that the Buddha is, you know, or the Dalai Lama.
Mm-hmm.
The Dalai Lama, that's what I meant. It's part of, it's in several people, but it's like your body is the vessel, whatever, but he still has the Bran Stark memories. Because I think most of us, you talk about being anticlimactic, was hoping that he was going to, like, jump up, punch Jaime in the face.
Because
mm-hmm. clearly that's what Jaime thought with the look at the end of the previous episode.
Yeah, I think that would have been just a huge plot hole, because the way that they had been positioning him as the Three-Eyed Raven is that this petty stuff is just way below me. You know, I'm way up here in the clouds. And so I couldn't see him being upset. I couldn't see him looking for retribution. I kind of figured it would go that way. And that's exactly how it went. Though, I mean, he threw some side eye to him.
However, the Three-Eyed Raven enjoys things. He wasn't bothered by the fact that Jaime got a little nervous.
Right. It'll be interesting to see. I think they're going to the way they're setting this up is they're going to use him as bait to try to lure the Night King in. We'll see how that plays out. But I want to talk a little bit about, before I let you go, about some of the theories and any predictions that are out there. There's this wild one out there that Brandon is the Night King. And that one just doesn't play with me, especially since we know the Night King is coming for Brandon.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, he's there. You see him and he's there looking at the castle. I mean, doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, so that one I'm just going to sweep aside as nonsense. But not only is it floating out there, I see it every day, you know, that Brandon is the Night King, and I see these side by side photos of him looking like Brandon. Then there's a photo next to that where he's sort of made up like the Night King, and then he's blended into the Night King finally. I just don't think that's going to happen. The theories around Azor Ahai are the things that intrigue me most. I think the conventional thinking is that Azor Ahai is Jon.
Yes.
Where we differ is that the books and the movie, I think, are taking a couple of different paths. I think those that read the books, I think Azor Ahai and the prince that would be are the same. Now there's this thinking that they are two different entities. There's a thinking that Dany is actually Azor Ahai, and that Jon is the prince who was promised. That's the official name of it, the prince who was promised, and that they're not one and the same. Looking forward to how that's going to play out. I don't have any seriously deep theories, but I've seen others suggest that that the prince who was promised could be Jaime and could be Ser Jorah, because there's this mythical sword that is associated with Azor Ahai, and both of those individuals have notable swords that they have been paying a lot of attention to in this series. So there could be some surprises there. I do think they'll probably go with conventional wisdom, and John will be the prince who was promised. What do you think?
I think it's John. I am a fan of Ser Jorah. Because, you know, he, in the words of In Vogue, never going to get it, never going to get it in terms of Danny.
Yeah.
So I think
that's his consolation prize.
Yes. Fulfillment of prophecy if he can't have a woman. I think it should be that, you know, yes. So that's how I think it's probably John.
I'm going to make my prediction, too, on how this thing's going to wrap up. I think that the battle against the Night King gets wrapped up by episode 4. I think quicker than most people think, and then I think a depleted Allied forces will finish this thing out, going up against Cersei Lannister and her 20,000 sellswords. That's the way I think the plot is going to move.
Yeah, but not elephants. She has
no elephants, but she's got a Greyjoy. And she's got 20,000 sellswords. And I think the challenge is going to be that the Allied forces will have lost a lot of power. And so they're going to be stretched and going up against Cersei, who is showing, you know, a great strategic move.
By the way, am I the only one who will be dancing a jig of jigs when Euron gets killed?
No, you're not. No, I'm hoping it's a beheading, or you know, I'm hoping it's something either slow and painful, nothing quick.
I want every bad thing. And that nasty, he's just such a sneerer, and he's so smug. He's disgusting, and he's smug.
Yeah.
And you just want bad things to happen to him, and you want him to be slow. You wanted to know him to know that these bad things are happening to him, and he's not as clever as he thinks he is, because he's really not.
Right. And I'm thinking Jamie's got to do it. I'm thinking one of two things is going to happen with Jamie. He's either going to logically go up against Euron Greyjoy and show that he's mastered his left hand sword moves now, or he's going to be the one that has to kill Cersei.
That hurts me as a twin, but also as a person. Here's the thing about Cersei. Cersei does not feel sorry for herself. I think she used to be, she doesn't anymore. And I think that if it came down to it, she'd be like, all right, let's bring it. All right, to quote the Nutty Professor, come on, Cletus. Bring it, Cletus. You know what I'm saying? That's how she would be. And if it had to be Jaime, it would have to be Jaime too. She'd be like, all right, let's do this.
Absolutely. I think that's how it's going to come down. Leslie Grace Streeter, entertainment writer for the Palm Beach Post. I want to thank you for lending your geekiness to this show today. And we'll be in touch. I'll get in touch with you to find out how things are progressing in the show and whether or not some of our predictions have come true. But please enjoy the rest of the season, and we'll talk soon.
I'm so excited. Let me know if you ever need anyone else to talk about this stuff, because obviously I have time.
Tune in next week when we will break down episode 3 with GOT fan and television news anchor Matt Lincoln. Big thanks to our producer Kevin Kloss for this episode. Get your pop life at waer.org or at Apple Podcast, and rate us while you're there. And follow the Pop Life Facebook page at Pop Life WAER. I'm Joe Lee.